had representations of human characters on the cover.
Yeah, animals.
And, yeah, and I have kind of run up against, and I think everyone should make their own choice about what they put on it, but for me, I feel like it allows the reader to imagine themselves, and my books aren't illustrated, so like there's no, and I've really, especially with the popularity of graphic novels, I've really run up against, like I'm in the process of, they're redesigning my the paperback cover for my newest book, and they want to put characters on the cover, and I'm curious what other, I've never talked to other authors about it, and I'm curious about your thoughts.
I that's a huge thing for me. So I did this series that there's two, there should be three eventually, that's Facts versus Opinions versus Robots. One of the reasons I used robots is I did not want to use any kind of person in that book at all to look bad. I have to make some of the characters look bad. When you draw a child in a picture book, the first thing you decide is, you know, gender. And that puts the book going this way or that way. You decide race. That puts it in front of different people. You dress that child. Now you've put them in a class. How well are they dressed? You draw that child's home. Is it urban? Is it suburban? Is it country? You define so much by just drawing a little character. And I was like, I don't want any of that clutter. But if I can give you a robot and a couple robots doing something, you don't bring all of that, I don't want to say baggage, but you don't bring all that information with you. And you just are sort of looking at what's face value. So I think I've always believed in that sort of reasoning for using animal characters. And I know people, there are people who hate it because it feels like, oh, well, there's other people who should be in books. But I know for myself, that's why I have issues, not issues, but like, I don't want to offend, let anyone down or keep anybody out of my story. So it's like, how can I do that? So, yeah.
I can add really good to thinking. That.
Yeah, yeah.
So like one of a cartoonist who I love to read his writing is Scott McCloud, Understanding Comics. And he uses this, in radio, but an illustration of a very detailed face of a specific person versus a blank smiley face. And what he puts out there is that when you see a very detailed, specific person, you see them as other. But when you see a very simple character that's very pared down, you can then see that character as you. So that's why like Peanuts and Charlie Brown and Snoop, like that works so well because they could be us, you know, it could be any of us. So that's something that I think about when I'm cartooning. And
that's super interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it really became an issue for me because my novel is based on an historical figure that has an iconic sort of image presence in the world. And so thankfully they asked my input and the author did wonderful things. I'm not good at images, so I'm glad that they took this over. But I basically got a representational figure, but with a sort of indiscreet head with the back to us. You don't see who the person is or what the person looks like, but it evokes a feeling of something like loss and contemplation, I think, that hopefully draws people in. But it's certainly not representational because I think that would have, again, sort of locked the story in too vividly in somebody's mind before the first page.
I think I would probably have a different perspective because I think my fiction is a little bit and a different demographic. I mean, that's me on the cover. It's my story. And so shout out to Rashad Duquette who did it. But, you know, I've never saw, you know, characters of South Asian origin, you know, as, you know, protagonists on the athletic level before. So getting to see like a brown kid on the cover with a brown girl on there wearing Kobe's number. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily, you have to be of that demographic to understand, but I'm glad to see representation that other kids can, you know, because they always saw us as side characters. Now people can see us that, hey, that we can actually ball out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's one right answer for everyone. I worry sometimes, at book festivals, it's been so nice to have kids, white, black, you know, of varying different demographics, wealthy, not wealthy, come up and say, you know, that they really connected with this boy character, Triss. And clearly in the way they're talking about them, they all are talking about Triss like they're that person. And it would break my heart to take that opportunity away, at least in terms of my stories.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's about seeing, you know, who you can connect with and who connects with you. Because that way, because you never know. I want everyone to love Trine, like her character. I don't care what demographic they fall into, because you want these characters, I want them to understand that Indian and Hindu culture is as universal to them. Diwali is like Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, and then they can see themselves.
And I definitely agree that that is an absolute necessity. I actually just got an email from a reader I have in my book, The Donut King. There's a character who's from the Himalayas in India, and I mentioned really specific things about it. And she, even though this character is not like one of the main characters, she wrote how important it was, because it really makes you understand that maybe some of the representation that we're doing isn't, you know, is very surface, and that it's still not allowing mm-hmm. people to really connect with what makes them connect with their own identities. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and I love that, because you never know what that person's going to connect with.
I just had to laugh because I just got a letter. But, you know, a lot of my fans are like 5 years old. They're like, I like your monsters, you know. So I'm like, I don't have that kind of discourse, you know, with my fans. So
So we just have a couple minutes left before we're switching to another group. I want to thank you all for coming today. Thank you for coming this weekend. We're so excited to see you at the Hudson Children's Book Festival tomorrow, Saturday, May 3rd at Columbia Green Community College from 10 to 3. So folks out there listening that want more information, want to see what we all look like, not me, I'm not on the website, but you can go to hudsonchildrensbookfestival.org and see all of the exciting stuff happening tomorrow. Everyone who's coming, you can find the bus schedule if you need a lift out to Columbia Green Community College. There are bus stops throughout the city, so you can find that schedule online as well. But yeah, thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you
for all that you do, all of the great work that you bring to
our
readers. Great. So we're going to be back shortly with another crew of authors and illustrators, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Oops.
Still a broadcast. Just so you know.
Yeah. So we are broadcasting live from the Hudson Area Library Teen Room, this Hudson Children's Book Festival weekend. We're so excited. My name's Emily Schmidas. I'm the library director here at the Hudson Area Library. I'm joined by Marlene Parmentier, a former educator from the Hudson City School District, former summer reading program provider here at the Hudson Area Library. We had many wonderful years with Marlene running that program.
It's wonderful to be here. Yeah.
And then, more importantly, maybe, although you're very important, Marlene, but we have authors and illustrators coming to this year's Hudson Children's Book Festival. Woo! Yay! So this year is the 14th annual Hudson Children's Book Festival. It's going to be Saturday, May 3rd. This year it's at Columbia Green Community College. If you need a lift, check out HudsonChildrensBookFestival.org for a list of all of the bus stops throughout Hudson that'll take you right to the college, and we'll bring you back, of course. We're not stranding anyone out there. But yeah, we're so excited to have so many authors and illustrators joining us this weekend and today here in the library teen room. So we have a lot of us, so I thought what we could do is do a quick go around just introducing yourself and saying a little bit about the work that you do, and maybe your latest book or books, depending on, some people come and they have like 5 books, and it's like, I don't want to make people just say one if you have a bunch, but go for it.
We'll start with Stephanie. Okay. So my name is Stephanie Seals. I'm an author, and I'm here with my book, My Daddy is a Cowboy, which is about urban cowboys.
I'm Nancy Castaldo, and I am a local author. I usually write a lot of STEM books about science subjects and the environment. And my book this year, I have 2 books focused on the Hudson River, a picture book called Whales in the City, and a book called River Keeper.
Okay. My name is Jeff Mack. I'm a picture book author and illustrator. And my newest book is called Time to Make Art, and it's about a girl who is not sure how to make her own art, so she travels throughout time and all around the world, and she meets all these different artists and asks them questions about how and why they make their art, and they give her ideas about how to do that. And then the book that I have coming up next comes out in July, and it's called If You Want to Write a Story. And this is about a character who is writing their own adventure story, but the adventure story that they're writing teaches kids how to write an adventure story. So a little bit about making art and a little bit about making stories.
If you couldn't tell, Jeff was holding those books up for you. My name is Josh Funk, and I am a writer of picture books. My newest book is the 6th book in the Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast series called Attack of the Scones.
Hi, my name is Brian Karras. I'm an author, illustrator of picture books. I've been at this for a long time. I've got 2 new books coming out. One is Our Air. It's about our atmosphere that we all share. And the other is Hummingbird's Big Trip, which is about a little hummingbird who has travel anxiety. So he's nervous about the big migration coming up. And that'll be out in about a year.
My name is Anthony Golson. This is my wife, Jalita Golson, and we're the authors of the Nyla Versus series. And the most recent book we have is Nyla Versus Goals. And it's about a young girl that's, as the book implies, trying to meet her goals. It's a little bit of math in there. We use soccer as a metaphor to show how kids can reach their goals. And it's a lot of fun.
Hi, my name is Sarah Huang. I am the author illustrator of my book that will be released on Tuesday. It's called Gertrude Gish on a Dish on a Fish. It was inspired by a Dr. Seuss sketch. So this book will be coming out with Penguin Random House and Seuss Studios.
Will it be available at the Book Fest?
Yes. It'll be fresh off the press.
Wow. That's one fun thing with the book festival. Sometimes there's authors that have books coming out like the week after, and sometimes you get it early. So that's fun.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My name is M.O. Yuki-san, and today's my birthday. So
happy birthday.
Yeah,
it's mine
too.
Happy birthdays are the best.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
It's your birthday too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hey.
Thank you. Oh, happy birthday.
Yay. So I'm very happy to be here and to find another May 2nd birthday.
That's right.
I'm the author of In My Mosque, One Wish, Ramadan Kareem, and Sammy's Special Gift. At the book festival, I'll have all those, but the newest ones are Sammy's Special Gift, which is about Eid al-Adha, a Muslim holiday that's coming up in June. And Ramadan Kareem is about the month of Ramadan, which we recently celebrated in April. And my newest book is a picture book biography called The Prince of Stars, and it's about a 15th century astronomer who built the world's largest observatory in Samarkand, Uzbekistan. And so I'm very excited. It's coming out in September.
Thanks. Yeah. So we're just going to have a conversation. So feel free to ask each other questions or bring up something that you want to talk about. But I'll just get us started with a question that I like asking authors and illustrators is, what do you love most about writing for young audiences or illustrating for young audiences? And or, I guess, because some of you do both. Yeah.
I think the young audiences.
Yeah.
That's what I appreciate most. I haven't done school visits in a while, but I think what I miss the most about what I do is interacting and seeing my readers.
And speaking of that, we just did a school visit just today, so we can attest to that. That's probably one of the biggest reasons for us as well, is mm-hmm. you know, connecting to the young generation. So.
And I'll add to that. Yeah, connecting with young readers is the most important aspect of our job, I think, and what we do. I also write for adults occasionally, but I love writing for kids because you never know the ripple effect of where that writing is going to take them. They become inspired, they become empowered, they become entertained and informed. So you just never know. I've had kids write to me that I've been writing for such a long time that are now adults and have gone into careers based on my books, and it's just always wows me. And that doesn't happen often. We don't usually know where our books take us, but with young readers, you never know.
Yeah, I think that like one of my favorite challenges about writing for young kids is I like the chance to write something that can appeal to adults but can be understood by very young kids. I think that's a really cool challenge, and if you can do that, I think that's a big success.
Yeah, the parents are definitely part of your audience.
Definitely.
And I'll say, I do not have children, but I read a lot of picture books too. And I love them.
One thing that I really love about it, in addition to connecting with the kids, because that is a favorite thing for sure, is for me as a text only author, is the collaboration with an illustrator. This is my debut, so I'm just like starting on this path, but like it's magic to write words and then have someone create art that's inspired by that. I like can't get over it, even though it's been almost a year since this came out. I think that's a really special experience. It's very specific to picture books. I mean, it happens with graphic novels to an extent sometimes, but I love that about picture books.
Yeah, I'll add to that. Picture books are like 50% is told visually, right? And usually the first mode of literacy for children is the visual, is the art. Yeah. And for my books, I grew up in the U.S. and I guess representation is what's important in terms of what my books feature is the diversity of Muslim characters and just having that representation where children they'll say, oh, this is the first time I've seen a book like this, mm-hmm. and I feel seen and I feel like I belong, you know, and that's so important, and you know, like for children to feel like they belong, is a powerful message in any medium, like in books as well as, you know, TV shows and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You all mentioned, you know, making the connections with students and enjoying children. You can't imagine the magic for a child to talk to their favorite author. It's just an illustrator. It's just my favorite thing with this book fest. It's just a wonderful, wonderful experience for them.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that that's what everybody said. Those are the two things that I would say, is the illustrations and connecting with kids. Like when somebody asked me my two favorite things, is getting to see, having a silly idea in my head, like pancakes and French toast racing through a fridge, and seeing an illustrator draw that is the coolest thing. Just seeing the sketches and how it comes to life. Because I didn't practice writing. I practiced writing words in picture books. I didn't practice how to draw. I don't know how to do that. So and it's magic seeing that happen. I will also say that I write as much for the adults as I do the kids. And I think that that's for picture books. I feel like that's a very Not for all picture books, but picture books are meant to be read by an adult to a child, unless you're writing an early reader. And I think that most of our books, yours might be, what is yours, the title of, again?
It's a Gertrude Gish on a Dish on a Fish.
Right. So, right. So that one might be to help learn to read, right? Yeah, that one might be for kids to read to themselves.
Yes.
But yeah, to have jokes like a Pixar movie that might go over the kid's head, but that entertain the adult. I think it's important. So I would say that my goal as an author I write books for adults to read to kids so the kids fall in love with reading, because I think that if an adult can read a book and be excited about how much they're enjoying the book, that will make kids excited about reading in general. And so I want to make it easy for the adults to actually enjoy the book. I think as a librarian, you can probably do a great job reading a book to kids, even if it's a boring book. Not that any of us write boring books, but for some adults, some parents, some teachers, you know, you want to make it easy for them to be like, oh, this is fun to read. And then the kids see that and it just shines through.
I like one of the things you were saying that, that I relate to is, you know, talking about different ways of telling stories and writing words, and also, you know, with pictures and the way that they work together in a picture book. A lot of times when I visit schools, kids like to ask me, do you like writing better or do you like drawing better? And I try to explain, you know, if you're drawing and you're putting the drawings in a certain sequence, you're in a way writing a story. It's a form of writing, telling a story with a sequence of pictures. And I feel like there's not a lot of places where you can do that except picture books and graphic novels, you know, where you have a sequence of images that tell a story. And then there's this magical way that the words can sort of interact with those pictures and sometimes change the meaning of the pictures as you're looking at them.
Right, so. And just adding on, like, well, I wasn't born in the States, so English was my second language. So picture books play like a big role in my life, and especially like early reader books, right? Because I was just learning how to speak English. Just seeing the words and seeing the pictures and making the correlation together just really helped me learn the language. And it's just like amazing to me, just like thinking about how we're playing like a role in childhood development, right? Just amazing. Like I even still remember those childhood like books, like picture books growing up, and for us to be doing that, yeah, I think it's just amazing and inspiring.
Which ones do you remember?
Well, because right now I've been so in the Seuss zone.
Yeah.
Green Eggs and Ham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they have just simple words I could remember and quirky images.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I love that Sarah is mentioning that. This is Nancy and I write predominantly nonfiction, and I have a photo of myself on my website and I'm holding a nonfiction picture book as like a 3-year-old. As my favorite toy at that time about seeds. And I've written about seeds as a grown-up for children. And we all have those, I think, memories of engaging in those meaningful books when we were children that continue to shape our lives.
Do you feel like that's why you're doing books today, is because you loved them so much when you were a kid?
This is Nancy again. Thanks, Jeff, for that question. I loved books as a kid. I was one of those kids that would climb trees and bring a book up with me and sit in a tree and read. So my books blend the things that I love, which is nature and being outside, with sharing those stories that I, and those facts that I love to learn about. So I think, yeah, it definitely shaped who I am today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh? Do you have favorite ones when you were a kid?
I had loved Corduroy, Caps for Sale.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Charlotte's Web. I remember making my parents go and buy that book because my teacher wouldn't read it fast enough to us. One chapter a day before nap time, and I was like, I need to know what happens. So, yeah, I think those are the favorites. I got a slide in my presentations that I usually skip because kids cheer so long throughout. I know that book. So I generally skip that one, but yeah.
I love your comment about how picture books are for adults as well. And when you were all talking about your favorite books, I was thinking how much I loved reading certain books to my children and what a delight it is to read to my grandson now, you know, my 2-year-old grandson who loves to read and loves to sit. And I just think you're absolutely right. It's for the children, but it's for the adults as well. And just such a wonderful experience.
Do you usually agree with your kids about what books they, you know, what they like and what you like? Is it usually the same books?
Yes. Yeah. When my son was about 12 or 13, he read a genre that wasn't like quite the way that I like. It was a science fiction, scary, you know. And I read it because I was talking to my daughter, who was much older, about books. And I thought, I have to do this with my son. Mm-hmm. And I did get into it after a while. But generally, yes, I love the books that my children read, my grandchildren read.
Don't you think that picture books are often a way into topics and feelings and emotions and learning and that we can't get from other books?
Exactly.
So that's why I think they resonate so well with adults as well as kids.
I don't know if you remember, but a few years back, there was a contestant on Jeopardy, and he won, I don't know how much money, but he was the winner. And they said, how do you know so much information? And he said, I read picture books. And he said, picture books are very condensed versions of like important topics. For example, nonfiction books, in 32 pages, you get all the information that you might need on a topic.
Yeah.
And I agree, you know, picture books are also for adults. For example, there's so many things that we don't know about as adults. And for example, my book, One Wish, it's about Fatma El-Fihri, who built the world's oldest university in Fez, Morocco in the 9th century. And a lot of people don't know about it, or about her and her university. So like that, I think like nonfiction books especially are useful.
Well, I know about it because I read your book.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
But I didn't know before your book.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, me too.
So a couple of people had brought up the idea about either being an author, working with an illustrator. I know some of you, I know at least Jeff and Brian, and maybe you all too, do both the writing and the illustrating? I'm not sure.
Just the writing.
You do just the writing?
Just the writing.
So I know sometimes you are just illustrating and sometimes you're doing both, and for some of you, you're just writing. I'm curious about what that relationship is like, or if there is a relationship, because I know, I feel like some people work very closely with an illustrator, some people it's very separate, or maybe they give them some inputs about what the images should look like. So I'm just curious about the diversity of experiences with that. And also for those that do both at times, how is that different from the opposite, I guess?
It's typically with me, when I'm working with an illustrator, most of the illustrations, I have a good idea of what I want in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I just normally source it out. I'll find something on Google or something like that's close enough to what I want. And then I'll send them, hey, like this, but bring this a little bit forward or bring this to the back, make this a different color. What's also good now, too, with these smartphones is you can adjust a lot of stuff on your own. So I can sketch stuff in there and send it to them. And I've been lucky and fortunate enough where the illustrator is so, if maybe not the first time, around the second time, it's perfect. It's like, that's exactly what I was asking for. So it's about finding something very similar to what you have in your mind and working from there. So.
Before I wrote and illustrated, this is Jeff. Before I wrote and illustrated, I illustrated books for other authors, and I learned a lot from those authors about how to write your stories and how to pare the stories down to just the essentials so that they would kind of dovetail with the illustrations, not overwrite. And I illustrated a book for Eve Bunting, who had, I think her manuscript had 18 words in the book, and it was just so spare, but it was, you know, just the right 18 words. And it showed me that it takes a lot of editing and a lot of work to get something really simple that just works nicely with the pictures.
Yeah. Nice. What book is that?
It was called Hurry, Hurry.
Oh, that's a great name.
That's a good book.
Thanks.
I bet it's different for nonfiction, though. You probably have to make sure that they're doing it right.
Well, this is Nancy. I mostly use photography for a lot of my books, and in that case, I do my own photography for most of my nonfiction books, which are a little older. I've only worked with like 3 or 4 illustrators in my career, and I've been blessed with great editors who have found those great illustrators. So when I get these illustrations, I go over them to make sure that they're accurate. But otherwise, it's in their hands to take my words and make something beautiful out of it. Mm-hmm. And they do a great job. This particular illustrator of Wales in the City is going to be here also tomorrow, Chuck Groening. He did a fabulous job on Wales in the City. I was in awe when I saw the illustrations, which I think when we put our words into the hands of illustrators, that's sort of what comes back, right? We're just in awe of how they've interpreted our words or to their work.
Stephanie
found that.
This is Stephanie. I think I had a different experience than what other people are talking about, in the sense that, so my background is in children's literature. That's what my master's is in. So I came to it with a lot of like awareness of the industry. My editor knew that. And so we made the decision about the illustrator together. And I got to talk to him and collaborate with him directly more than usual, because My Daddy is a Cowboy is the first picture book to have Panamanian American characters. And he is not Panamanian. So I had to talk to him a lot about the cultural elements specifically, not as much about the cowboy elements. You know, he did his own research for that. But I feel like, I mean, he won a Caldecott Honor and the Coretta Scott King Illustrator Medal. So I feel like it worked out for him and for me. So it worked out. But I do think like it can be important, at least for traditional publishing, to give the illustrator space to tell the story their way, to have their vision, because they're bringing their own creative genius to it, and I want them to have space to do that. So that was my experience, and I also feel very lucky to have gotten to collaborate with him. He's a really great collaborator.
What's his name?
C.G. Esperanza. Sorry, I didn't say that. C.G.
Esperanza.
So,
it is beautiful.
Yeah, he did amazing work.
Cool.
And he works on oils. Like, what?
Whoa.
Wow.
What?
Love to see the original art.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
In traditional publishing, usually the illustrator and the author never communicate. So the author submits the text, and then the editor picks an illustrator, and then the illustrator does their own thing. And different from self-publishing, where you could hire your own illustrator and then tell them what your vision is. And but with Hatem Ali, who's the illustrator for In My Mosque and Ramadan Kareem, we sort of started talking on social media without telling, this is a secret, without telling our publisher. And then it's funny, I haven't shared this with Hatem Ali, but our publisher in the UK for Ramadan Kareem, she sent an email saying, I was so amazed by the illustrations and the words. They sync so well together. It seems like it was done by one person. And I didn't want to tell my editor, saying, yeah, because Hatem Ali and I were like talking and we were collaborating and we were like discussing like each spread and, you know, what the vision and, you know, what the words and so on. So it did feel like a one person sort of thing, but it's really valuable and exciting when that happens, where the author and illustrator can communicate and can be respectful and just collaborate together. But I understand why editors don't want authors and illustrators to communicate, because maybe authors might overstep their bounds and like start dictating, like, I want this, I want that, and then, but the illustrator, they have their own vision, and picture books are 50%, you know, the illustration, 50% the words.
Did your editor ever find out?
I eventually told her, but...
Did you get in trouble?
No, she's very nice. Her name is Megan Ilnitsky at HarperCollins.
And, what's her email?
Yeah, she's very nice.
She knows
very
now.
Supportive. Yeah.
I think it's funny you say 50%. I feel like illustrations are like so much more. I can write 500 words while sitting on the toilet. I don't think you can illustrate a book. Well, it depends with an iPad or Wacom. But I think that the illustrators do so much more work. And the other reason not to tell them how to do it is you don't want to stifle them. You don't want to tell them do something one way, because then they might think of something so much better. You know, they know how to do art. They practiced art for their whole lives. I've never practiced art. So they're going to think of something so much cooler than I can think of. So if I tell them to do something, it's just going to make the book worse.
Well, to add on to that, I think it's different if you're writing nonfiction. Unfortunately, I can't write while sitting on the toilet, because I have to do lots and lots of research. For example,
to be fair, I've never actually done that. It was two trips to the bathroom.
We get that, Josh.
Yeah.
For example, for One Wish.
IBS. I hope my wife's not listening.
For example, for One Wish, I had to do, I don't know, maybe like 8 years worth of research.
Wow.
Before, and lots and lots of revisions before getting the text complete. And the illustrations took 2 years. So I spent 8 years writing it, and the illustrations were 2 years. So just to...
Brian, how long does it take you to do some of your books?
Well,
your illustrations are spectacular.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. It depends on the book. I mean, if I've written maybe 10 or 11 books, but I've illustrated many more than that by other authors. And I really appreciate hearing from the other authors here how much freedom you and respect you give the illustrators. I'm working on a book now that someone else wrote, and I there are parts of the story I really have no idea what she's trying to get at, and I think I would make the worst author, because I would know exactly what I'm trying to say, and I would tell them, this is what I want you to draw, and I know that that's not the way we all work. So I think it's respect for each other's role is an important thing. You asked me how long it takes me to...
Some of those books I know do take years to do.
Yeah,
right?
Years, not for me. I work pretty fast. And if I'm, especially if I'm not writing the story myself, I can read the story and see the pictures simultaneously the first time. And that's my favorite part of the process. And that all goes pretty quickly. And I've done so many that I'm used to the process, and I'm used to, you know, producing. But if I'm writing a story, it can take years and years and years, and it goes through so many changes that it's not the same story that it started out being. The Hummingbird is one example. I've wanted to write a book about my bird migration forever, and it took on many forms. And then all of a sudden... the latest iteration, it wrote itself in a way. And I think it took all those years of not thinking about it, but thinking about it at the same time.
Brian, you write fiction and nonfiction?
Well, I wouldn't say that what I write is nonfiction, but it's about nonfiction subjects. I wrote one called Atlantic, and it's about the Atlantic Ocean. And I wrote it I wrote about facts, facts about the Atlantic Ocean, but I wrote it for children. I wrote it in a kind of a poetic way.
Yeah.
And
I figured that my thinking was that students, young kids, will get plenty of time to learn the facts and the science and the nitty-gritty of their subjects. And I want to introduce them to the beauty of it, to open their eyes to it.
Yeah. It's like a little informational fiction.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the one that makes it really hard to categorize for the librarians.
Yeah. We love a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think, like, when you're talking about how long it took you to research, it didn't take me, so this is Stephanie, it didn't take me as long to write My Daddy's a Cowboy, which is fiction, but it's based on nonfiction, right? Like you're talking about, Brian, like it's about urban cowboys that really exist. So I think, like, just something I want to name, because I feel like this is really prevalent in the industry, I don't think the amount of time the contribution takes means it's more important or less important. I think the text and the illustrations are equally important, because without either piece, you're not going to get the story in this form as a picture book. Mm-hmm. So I just want to name that. So I feel like picture book text, often it's like, it's not a big deal. And I'm like, actually it is.
So very important. That's all I'm saying. Well, we're at the end of our time for today, but I want to thank you all so much for joining us today and this weekend for the Hudson Children's Book Festival. Hope you have a great time tomorrow, meeting with all the students and families and librarians and teachers at the festival. And thank you so much for what you do and all the amazing work you put out into the world for us readers.
Thank you so much for having us.
And to all our listeners out there, be sure to check out HudsonChildrensBookFestival.org for more information about this weekend's book fest. You can find the bus route, all of the bios and fun facts about the authors and illustrators. I love the fun facts section.
And every child that comes gets a free gift certificate for a free book.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Awesome. Isn't that awesome?
So they can take that and just go around and pick any
author
book they want.
And get a signed book.
That's cool.
Isn't that wonderful?
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So thanks so much. Thank you. Happy reading. Thank you.